So this is work that I led when I was a research fellow with the Union of Concerned Scientists, along with my colleague Marcia DeLange, as well as Lori and Alan Flint, who are hydrologists with USGS in Sacramento. So I want to just start by asking a question. How many people in the room have seen this infographic before? Right, a lot of us. Okay. So we're kind of a self-selecting group of scientists here who are really interested in soil health, but we know that there are a lot of other interested stakeholders as well in soil health, including agribusiness and farmers, and really this ability of a healthier soil to store more water. So we've seen a lot of nice presentations this afternoon around carbon, nitrogen, other benefits of a healthy soil, but I'm going to focus on water today. And so while we love this infographic, we were really interested in this project to try to better quantify what does a healthier soil really mean in terms of water outcomes, what practices lead to that, and what's the benefit on a field and landscape scale. And so I really see this work, and we see this work as really critical, and healthy soil contributing to this idea of kind of green infrastructure. What's the role agriculture has to play in this? Because we know that heavy rain events are increasing. They can cause lots of damages on farms. They can cause lots of damages to cities as well. It can be very damaging and traumatic for residents, very expensive. We also know that the extended periods of dry are increasing as well. And so we know that from history that the way that humans interact with their land can have profound impacts. So when you pair humans driving land to its limits because of policy and economics and several heavy or several very dry years, you have events like the Dust Bowl. So we know extended dry periods are increasing and that the way we interact with our land is really important. And we know that these conversations around managing heavy rain events are not just limited to the center of the country, that coastal communities as well are trying to figure out how they can manage heavy rain events as well, just like the state where we're sitting right now. So one of the important questions that we wanted to answer that I'll start with in my presentation today is about what is the impact of different agricultural practices on water storage on a field scale. And so what's the difference between how much water can stay in the soil if you have a field that looks like this on the left? This is a research site with alfalfa relative to a bare soil. And so this is actually a pretty difficult scientific question to tease out, right? Because we know that soil water is very variable in space and time. There's a lot of different ways to measure soil water. And so to try to piece off a question of this big scientific question, we worked on a meta-analysis project to look at two specific soil water properties that are related to water storage. So that's the water retained at field capacity and the total porosity. And for this meta-analysis, we looked at experiments that in the literature had compared continuous living cover practices, so things like cover crops, perennial crops, or agroforestry, to side-by-side trials with annual crops. And so what we found was that across these 27 field sites that we included in the analysis, or 27 experiments, this is the distribution of studies that you see here, there were 93 paired observations, and anything above zero is where the continuous living cover practices increase these two properties. We found an increase of porosity of 8% and an increase in field capacity by 9%. So that seems to go along well with some of the other results we've seen today with comparing perennial crops or perennial systems to annual systems. And so the other reason that we wanted to look at these two properties for this part of our answering this question about practices improving water on a field scale was because these are two properties that are commonly found in cropping system and hydrology models. And so that would allow us to extend our understanding of water outcomes on a larger scale, extend that in space and time. And so this is work that's recently been published in Soil Science Society of America, if anyone is interested. And so to answer those questions about what is the impact of a healthier soil on a landscape scale, we worked with a hydrology model to represent the state of Iowa because it's fairly representative of Midwest agriculture and corn and soybean crop rotations. And so what you see in the map of the crop mix in Iowa, yellow is corn, the dark green is soybean, and so I mentioned that, I'm sure everyone is familiar with it, but those are summer annual crops, right? So those are crops that are growing, that we plant in the spring, that we harvest in the fall, that are growing and using water only for a small time of the year, and again, those other months of the year, the soil is left bare and unprotected, and there's also no plants on the landscape using water. And so we wanted to ask this question of what if we did, it's hypothetical, right? Let's dream big, let's be aspirational. So what if we had a more diverse landscape that included things like some of the what the other speakers have talked about? So what if we had a landscape that looked more like perennial grasses for livestock, or just more perennial crops, maybe for bioenergy or forage, as well as more cover crops? So what would that do for water outcomes with a healthier soil? As I just mentioned, from the meta-analysis, we see that across a range of environments, these practices can increase water storage or properties related to water storage. And so to try to represent this, we worked with a hydrology model. It's called the Basin Characterization Model, and it was developed by our collaborators, Lori and Alan Flint. And so the central part of the model's ability to calculate the in and out flows of the water balance is the soil profile. And so this tool predicts things like actual evapotranspiration, so evaporation from the soil surface, and the water use from the plants, so that we can look at what's the difference in crop water use as a proxy of plant productivity. And we can also look at things like runoff as a proxy for what is a change in flood impact. So really trying to link what's the impact in a more diversified landscape with healthier soil, both from an agricultural standpoint and from, you know, the benefits to an urban environment as well. And so just to give you a sense of what we did in terms of altering the model to represent this more diverse scenario. So we, as I mentioned, and as was bounded by the results of our meta-analysis, we looked at increasing the field capacity and the total porosity of the soil. And we also changed some of the crop water use factors to represent some of these perennial crops and cover crops, as opposed to just having plants like corn and soybean growing in the summer months. And so we represented 17 different watersheds, more or less representing the state of Iowa. And our baseline scenario was what you see here in this map, so mostly annual summer annual crops of corn and soy. And then we looked at two different land use shifts, and we used data that's been generated by two different groups at Iowa State University looking at shifting some of the most erodible croplands, which happen to be kind of concentrated in the more topographic parts of the state, to either include a perennial crop or to be corn or soybean, including a cover crop, as well as the least profitable croplands, which are a little bit different in terms of geographic distribution. But if you're interested in this, this is a part of a report that we released through the Union of Concerned Scientists. It's on the website. That's the name of it. But so these were analyses that had already been done. And so we looked at targeting those regions of the landscape to include a healthier soil, as well as plants that were using water at different times of the year. And so I just want to give you a sense of some of the bigger picture trends that we saw. So we ran the model for a historic period of 1981 to 2015. And when you average across all of those 17 watersheds that I showed you, we found that there were sizable reductions in runoff, greater amounts of water use, and even more water use in some of the historic drought years in the record from 1981 to 2015. And we also did a calculation to look at the reduction in flood frequency. And so we looked at the number of months that reached flood stage for the different watersheds that we represented. And we found that there could be up to a 20% reduction in flood frequency. So it's not a small amount when you think about how expensive and damaging some of these events can be. And then I want to show you just a little bit more specifically, rather than just the big picture, of what this result looks like in terms of the runoff and the crop water use across the distribution of rainfall years. So let me just orient you to what the next couple graphs are going to look at. So this is the percent in runoff reduction for the shift in the most erodible croplands from the baseline scenario across the distribution of rainfall years. So each dot that you see on this graph represents an average of those 17 watersheds for each of the years, so 35 years in this historic simulation. And so basically you see this general pattern here where the lower rainfall years have a higher reduction in runoff. And it kind of goes along the gradient here of rainfall. And so what we interpret that to mean is that this more diverse crop mix with a healthier soil is getting every inch of water in those heavy rain events that might happen in a rainfall year. It's getting into the soil versus running off. And so again, this is averaged by all of those 17 watersheds, but if we break this out, so now what we're looking at is all of those watersheds separately, so there's 17 dots for every year, but just grouped by if there was a greater amount of land shifted in each of these watersheds. So, of course, in the southwest part of the state, there was some areas that are highly erodible, so they were all shifted in our hypothetical simulation. And so what you see, and I just want to call attention to the scale here. So this graph, when you average, is, goes up to about a high of a 25% reduction in some of the average to drier years, all the way up to a 200% reduction some of the years. So the point being that the more land that's converted and the healthier soil you have, the greater environmental benefit that you get. And I'm just going to show you, too, the a different trend in the increase in crop water use. And so same idea that each dot represents an average of those 17 watersheds across the distribution of rainfall years. And this is the less profitable cropland scenario, so the percent of water increased from the baseline. And what you see here is a different pattern, and actually that the more rainfall that was received, the greater increase in water use. So in terms of efficiency, right, this is this more diverse landscape with a healthier soil in our simulation is showing that it's better able to take advantage of that additional rainfall. And then when you group this by watershed, depending on how much land in that area that's been shifted and to have a healthier soil, you can see, again, a greater benefit when you have more land in that area that's been shifted. So then just to wrap up, this is the conceptual diagram of the results that we found in terms of a healthier soil and the impacts that it can have on a field and landscape scale. So what we found is that including cover crops, perennial crops with annual crops, and agroforestry here in our nice, more diverse representation here, you have more water stored in the soil. You do have more water use from plants, but also less runoff, as compared to an annual crop system that's leaving the soil bare and unprotected for a large part of the year. And so again, this is work that is in a report that we put out in August. It's 20 pages, or there's a 4-page summary, but we made a fun video that's just 3 minutes long if you're interested in it and don't want to sit through reading the whole report. Yeah, and that's all. I'm happy to take questions. And really, again, we see this work as trying to better quantify the benefit of a healthier soil and how soil, how agriculture can contribute to concepts around green infrastructure and the benefit of soil to contribute to ecological flood and drought mitigation. So thanks.
Thanks, Andrea. So there's time for questions.
Rafa.
So Andrea, Iowa, large portion of Iowa is tall grain. I wonder if that was
Yeah, so Rafa's question is about tile drainage and how we considered it. So, you know, we're not able to represent that perfectly in the model, but you know, we paired, and I didn't show any, I just feel like the calibration stuff is kind of boring for most people, but we did find a pretty good fit in terms of the data to stream flow for all of the watersheds. And what we had to do to try to represent more stream flow was essentially change the permeability of the bedrock. I mean, so we didn't have an exact representation for tile drainage, and that definitely complicates the hydrology in Iowa, but we did find a pretty good fit to our stream flow. So.
Did you try to look at any relationship between these water dynamics and nutrient dynamics?
Not in our analysis, no, but there's been some good work done. I know there was a paper that came out of Iowa State last year where they looked at the whole upper Mississippi watershed, and if there was like 40% of the corn acreage went to switchgrass or miscanthus, I think that they found that that would get the dead zone, the hypoxia in the dead zone to like half of what it is now. So there is some work out there that's done that, but we have not, at least in this analysis.
Well, I'd like to point out, I think you guys, some group from the Union of Concerned Scientists has a talk tomorrow, right, in the policy session.
Yeah, very right? Good.
And so, you know, I see that, and I think it's great. And then, of course, as many of you, I think, well, how can we get that done? And so I hope people attend the policy session tomorrow.
At 1:30 p.m.
And there's plenty of other great sessions going on at the same time. I think we have our main soil health symposium at the same time. But if you're not going to that, you know, please go to the policy one, and let's thank all our speakers, and thanks for coming.